From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. State of Belief can be heard across the country weekends on Air America Radio. The program and this podcast are made possible by Interfaith Alliance and its members. For more information on Interfaith Alliance and its work promoting faith and freedom throughout America, visit interfaithalliance.org. And while you're there, please consider supporting State of Belief and this free podcast service by making a tax-deductible donation to Interfaith Alliance Foundation. We need your help to keep State of Belief on the air. Thank you for listening.
Air America Radio and the Interfaith Alliance Foundation present State of Belief, Religion and Radio Done Differently. Here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone, to State of Belief. I am Welton Gaddy, president of the Interfaith Alliance. On today's show, a look at religion, politics, and the media with radio and television host and undeniably rising star, Rachel Maddow. In late September, Rachel invited me on her radio program to talk about religion and the election. Now here, take a listen to how that interview ended.
Reverend Dr. Welton Gaddy hosts State of Belief on Air America Radio. He's the president of the Interfaith Alliance. Can I come do this with you on State of Belief sometime?
You were going to do it.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
And here she is, Rachel Maddow, keeping her promise. Today, she is my guest. And in the next hour, we're going to continue our discussion about the role religion is playing in this year's race to the White House. But we'll also shift the focus a bit into questions of the media. How well equipped are today's reporters and commentators to talk about religion? Has the subject gotten a fair shake? And what important questions about faith, religion, church, and state are not being asked in this election cycle? We've got a lot to talk about, so let's get right to it. Now, since she has just been recently on The Tonight Show, I need to do the old Johnny Carson introduction, but I'm sorry, I can't do that. Rachel, as many of you know, is the host of The Rachel Maddow Show, heard evenings here on Air America. She recently did make the jump to television with The Rachel Maddow Show, now on MSNBC and going gangbusters. Rachel, as you soon will find out, has been a good friend to State of Belief since the very beginning of the program, and I am delighted to have the opportunity to speak with her today. Rachel, here's my best shot at it. Here's Rachel. Welcome to the show.
It's very, very nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I've been looking forward to this for several reasons, one of which is to say to you, and I've wanted to say it in public with a radio audience, thank you for the support you gave us when we launched State of Belief on Air America Radio. The fact is that some people around here kind of looked down their noses and said, what are we doing with a religion show on Air America? For some reason, you got it. Why?
Obviously, because I have some sort of special relationship with the chosen. I feel, first of all, I apologize on behalf of Air America as one of the original people here. I am the last original Air America host who is still here in a daily weekday time slot. And to the extent that people look down their nose at you, I'm sorry for that. I don't want us to be that kind of company for any reason. And the fact that it's probably an ideological thing makes it even stupider. I feel like we are a very religious country, and regardless of what anyone's individual personal religious beliefs are, you can't understand America or American politics without understanding religion and how it drives us in so many different ways, and how much of our constitutional heritage and what is unique and important about the way the Founding Fathers set this country up for us and the reason we're still around this many centuries later has to do with understanding of and appreciation for the importance of religion. So how can you not want to talk about it? I think that liberals in particular have a shyness around the issue that's born from the right place. It's born out of respect for the privacy of the issue. But it means that we don't fully participate, I think, in the national discussion about religion in a way that we really ought to be.
I remember your first show on MSNBC television when it was the Rachel Maddow show. Mm-hmm. And you dealt, in a large part of that show, you dealt with the subject of church-state relations.
That's right.
Was that a risk?
You know, I remember a lot of the discussion on that first show about church and state division was with Pat Buchanan,
right?
Who is my great sparring partner and my weird ideological bookend in television. And Pat didn't seem uncomfortable, because he never seems uncomfortable because he's such a confident debater. But he seemed surprised that I was doing that. He was sort of starting to caution me. You ought to stay away from this religion stuff. It's going to look bad. You attacking people on the basis of their religion. And I was saying, no, that's not what I'm doing. But I am willing to talk about religion because I believe in the division of church and state, and because it's been foisted on us. I mean, that was immediately following that test-cased Sunday where the right-wing legal group put up all those pastors toward making explicit endorsements from the pulpit. And I don't feel shy about the issue. I don't believe that liberals should feel shy about the issue. And I don't feel like talking about religion is insulting to religious people. But Pat was shocked about it, which I thought was kind of great because, you know, once you rock people back on their heels, they're easier to defeat an argument.
let me give you an example or two, yeah. And you tell me how you think media in general did with these. What about Barack Obama's alleged Muslim identity as confused by his membership in the congregation pastored by Jeremiah Wright, and the way all of that exploded? How did the media handle that?
The specific question of how he could both be a Muslim and have a radical Christian preacher?
Well, actually, both strategies, both news stories, it seemed to me, were intended to rise to the surface and gain attention because they would bring negative reactions to Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you grade the way the media in general handled that?
I would say that the Muslim issue has been handled better than the Jeremiah Wright issue with this caveat. I think that there is a dividing line between right-wing media and mainstream media. There's another dividing line between mainstream media and left-wing media. But on the right, and I would include the bigger blogs in the right-wing world, and I would also include Fox News, and I would include almost all talk radio, that is not us and the other progressives out there, they ran with the Muslim story in a way that was salacious, partisan attacking, designed to slime him, and with no respect to the faith of Islam, for one, but also literally just in a way to try to hit him politically. But I think the mainstream media, after some initial false starts about it, covering it as if it were a legitimate question, did start to say this is a political tactic that is being used against Obama, and let us discuss it as a political tactic. And that's the way to do it. On the issue of Jeremiah Wright, the fact that there was videotape of Wright speaking in his intensely charismatic, provocative style was too much for the media to walk away from, and they couldn't resist.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran with that story, I think, well beyond its utility as an item of news, and just were essentially they made it into a religion porn story. You know, they just made it into something where you're just going to see the pictures, see the pictures, see the pictures, see the pictures over and over again without content. And that was, I think, that they just couldn't help themselves.
I'm talking with Rachel Maddow. She is a guest today on State of Belief. We've been looking forward to this. In just a moment, we're going to come back and ask a question about whether journalists are actually equipped to deal with religion or not. We'll be right back. This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy, and I'm eager. Let's get right back to more of my conversation on the media's coverage of religion in the 2008 election with my guest, Rachel Maddow. Rachel, are journalists equipped to deal with religion?
No, But I don't think that journalists are equipped to deal with national security either. I mean, what makes a good journalist, especially when you're talking about anchors and pundits, is a good general knowledge of a lot of about a lot of different things. And that usually precludes deep knowledge about any one particular area.
Are there more biases among the media toward religion than, say, toward economics?
That's the kind of question that I would ask you. Do you see bias in the way that do you see bias toward one particular faith over another in the way that the mainstream media talks about religion?
I knew you were going to do that.
I wanted to ask you about this stuff. How do you see it that way?
I do. Yeah. But I think there are many reasons for that. One is because religion has done everything possible to earn a bad reputation. And that's why you see people being standoffish about religious programming. I think it's why people, particularly in the national media, are reticent to bring a religious leader on. In fact, now I'm going to segue so I can turn this back on you. But one of my pet peeves, actually, in this discussion is that when an issue of religion comes up, what the typical response from the media would be to have on the very conservative voice, and then you have on either a progressive non-religious voice or an African-American minister who is probably theologically conservative but socially progressive, and then someone who kind of is the middle person in there. Now, is there a way for us to move beyond that paradigm for dealing with religious issues? And if you have on a conservative religious voice, have on a progressive religious voice, not secular voice, who can deal with the same scriptures, deal with the same language, and all of that.
Would a progressive religious voice, a person representing a progressive religious perspective, honestly represent as many Americans, be speaking for as many Americans as a conservative religious speaker?
Probably not, because, and there's a good reason for that, because one, conservatives have it all over us in that there is a uniform message, and there is an insistence on a level of orthodoxy that allows almost any one speaker to say, I'm speaking for millions of people. There is not that kind of uniformity in progressive religion in the United States.
In progressive politics, generally speaking. Maybe that's the great debate with liberal versus conservative in this country, is that by being conservative, you're essentially, and I don't mean to slag off conservatives, but you are essentially willing to accept more authority than if you are progressive, either in religious politics or not in religious politics. And so maybe that's part of the problem. I do feel like there was, particularly in 2004, with the sort of culture war issues, front burner in that election, the way they were in 2000 as well. I think that there was an uptick in interest in the media in having progressive religious voices represented. And I don't think it helped. I also think, though, that there has been a split between the Republican Party and conservative, religious, politically minded organizer folks. They do not; they are not unified in the same way they were, even as recently as 2004. Largely because they picked John McCain as their nominee, I think, but also for some other reasons. Also because of disappointment with George W. Bush as a conservative. That schism has not received that very much attention either. And I don't know if that's because conservative religious folks are very savvy with the media and they know that they don't want to go on TV and talk about their differences of opinion with people that they can't exploit for political gain. But that's something that I would love to see explored too. I just sort of feel like this. I share your, I think, dissatisfaction that the sides are being well represented.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I was interested, have been in this campaign, and I don't know whether it comes from this lack of understanding or the generalist posture or what it is of the media, but the mainstream press gave a pass to Barack Obama early on in the primaries on his use heavy use of religious rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember weekends when he went into houses of worship in South Carolina and asked people to join him and pray for him because he could bring in the kingdom. Now, I know some people later said, well, you know, what, you don't know what kingdom he was talking about. Come on. He was in an African-American church asking for people to pray for him to bring in the kingdom. Of course, he was talking about the kingdom of God. George Bush didn't get a pass mm-hmm. on using religious language and shouldn't have. What was the difference there?
Great question. I think that is about liberals wanting to win more than anything, and liberals having decided that if they need to act like Republicans in order to win, they want that to happen. And so, you know, when John Kerry spoke in religious terms in 2004, he got a pass from the left. When Barack Obama has done that, and I agree that he has done it almost in extremis in this presidential campaign, he has gotten a pass. And I think that is a strategic, intellectually dishonest pass from the left to say, you know what, we may have a problem with this in terms of our respect for the Constitution and our beliefs about the separation between church and state and what kind of country this is supposed to be. And we will tell you about that when some guy on the other side is doing it. But when our guy's doing it, maybe it'll help him win.
Well, let me give you an example of that, because I don't this is another part of my misunderstanding here, because the past in this instance came from both the right and the left. John McCain said early in the primaries that the founders of this nation intended a Christian nation.
Yep.
Now, that's just not true.
And it's really dangerous.
And why was no one out front saying, how can a senior senator make such a statement?
I remember criticizing. I remember taking McCain on for that during the primaries on Hardball. I was a guest on Chris Matthews' show, and he decided to play hardball with me and go after me in a big way because he did not believe that McCain had said it. I said, you can't call this a Christian nation. You can't do that. And it was in the part of a larger point. He did not concede that anybody had said that. And I was set up with somebody on the right supposed to be arguing against me. And I remember it was a laugh out loud moment for me because the guy on the right, who's supposed to be my adversary in this fight with Chris moderating between us, said, actually, what she's talking about there, John McCain really did say it was a Christian nation. And I think that's fine. But it was almost disbelief because it didn't become a mainstream political critique of what was going on. So I think that was scary. I think it represented on John McCain's part one of the most worrying things about this whole run for him, this sort of willingness to either undermine principle or to throw principle under the bus in favor of what might sound good in a pandering way to whatever audience is listening to you right then.
Talking with Rachel Maddow, we've been talking about religion and politics generally. We're going to narrow the focus when we come back and look at some very specific issues and how they've been treated. We'll be right back. State of Belief. My guest today is Rachel Maddow, host of the Rachel Maddow radio program on Air America Radio, and now the Rachel Maddow television program on MSNBC. Here's more of our conversation about religion, media, and the 2008 election. Rachel, where does religion fit on a list of the issues that will be most important to voters on Election Day?
It's a good question. There are a number of ways in which religion is going to factor into this, into the way that people vote. The easiest ones to explain are that people may vote against Barack Obama because they believe that he is a Muslim and they do not want to vote for somebody who is a Muslim. They may also vote against Barack Obama because they don't like Jeremiah Wright. They don't like the man who is known to have been Barack Obama's pastor, the man who pastored his church when his children were baptized and who conducted the marriage ceremony for him and his wife. They may, religious prejudice may therefore rear its head in that way. It's also possible that conservatives who would vote on issues like abortion, who would vote on single issue, religiously motivated issues, may sit on their hands and not come out to vote for John McCain because they do not see him as sufficiently conservative, even though his record on abortion is essentially 99% pure. Sarah Palin's is 110% pure, as far as I can tell, on that issue. That may factor in on the right. In terms of whether or not people are considering issues like having an Office of Faith-Based Programs in the White House, our missteps as a nation and our unnecessary provocations as a nation in essentially declaring some sort of holy war against Islam and conflating that with the fight against terrorism, I don't see those as being major issues in this election, and they could have been. And I think had we had a more overtly religious Republican nominee, we probably would have seen that stuff. It just so happens that John McCain isn't thought of as a very religious person. Barack Obama appears to be a much more devout and regular churchgoer than McCain does, but Democrats don't tend to run on religion the way that Republicans do.
Do you think that there is a huge difference in the way religion would look in a McCain administration and the way it would look in an Obama administration?
Yes. I think that Obama will be bending over backwards compared to McCain, relatively speaking. He would be bending over backwards to try to show that he is is not hostile to religion, that he is not hostile to religious people, and that he is comfortable around people of faith and around expressions of faith. And I think that will largely be in order to try to fight back against conservative caricatures of Democrats and liberals as being unfair toward religion. I think that John McCain, we can probably expect to see some of the way that the Bush administration treated religion. For all of the talk during the campaign about how religious a person George W. Bush was and how central that was to all of his decisions, he essentially treated conservative religious folks as voting machines. You know, he treated them as, you know, or slot machines, if you like, in terms of trying to get a payout from them. And I do think that explains some of the resentment that's surfaced now late in the second Bush term between religious activists and that administration.
Mm-hmm. Not as high on the list as I want it to be, but I know high on some people's list of election issues is the Supreme Court and what the Supreme Court is going to look like after the next administration, or what it probably will look like. Would you ever do a story on the religious makeup of the Supreme Court? I mean, there's now, and I'm not supposed to say this because I'm supposed to say religion shouldn't be considered as a part of an evaluation of a candidate or of a government institution. The fact is, when you look at the major controversial issues in our nation, there are distinct religious positions on those issues, and we now have five members of the Roman Catholic Church on the Supreme Court. Would you ever take that on in a story?
Yes, and the way that I would take it on, and I've thought about this, and I was raised Catholic. My mom has more than one sister who is a nun, and my father converted to Catholicism when I was a kid, and I was baptized and went through catechism and all the rest. I find it deeply troubling that the Catholic hierarchy in the United States has threatened Catholic politicians. To say, if you vote for blank, if you vote for X, if you hold this view publicly, you will not be administered the Eucharist. You will not essentially be welcome in your church. We will try to change your behavior as a public servant because of what our doctrine tells us. I think the Catholic Church making that decision to try to cross that line into controlling the behavior of public servants, using faith as a cudgel like that, I think is very dangerous to the Catholic Church. I think that makes Catholic politicians less electable, and I think that it, I think it opens up a lot of potential backlash toward the church from the public sector that isn't fair to other Catholics. So I think that it is an unwise strategic move on behalf of the church. I understand why they're doing it. They feel desperation around some of these issues because they see them as a moral imperative. But it's not in the long-term interest of Catholics in the United States, and it's not in the interest of Catholic leadership in the United States.
A phenomenon that bothers me is that most people think you're not talking about a religious issue unless you're using the word religion.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of issues in this campaign that I see as profoundly religious issues, certainly moral issues, that need some elaboration of having that nature.
Like,
let me give you an example, because I wanted to ask you about it. As the campaign has moved along and we get closer to Election Day, the pressure is on. Dirty campaigning is becoming more and more prominent. I listened recently to a campaign speech. In this instance, it was Governor Palin giving the speech, and she was using a line rhetorically that I think Senator McCain has used as well. Who is Barack Obama?
Mm-hmm.
And someone in the audience responded a terrorist as the identification. And in one other of the speeches, someone said, kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
those were on the same day. That's right.
That seems to me, Rachel, to invite a response that says, look, there's no place for this. This is a political campaign. I mean, we're dealing here with hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
We're dealing here with threat. That is a religious issue. What should we be saying about that?
How is that a religious issue? Do you mean that it is a moral issue?
It is a moral issue. It is a religious issue. I don't make a very tight, close separation between a religious issue and a moral issue. Hmm. But when you start talking about a person's political credentials as being a reason for taking that person's life— hmm. That is a religious issue to me, and that is a moral issue to me, and it is an issue about the health of our country. So how do you respond to that?
I think that there are I agree with you, and I think I come at it from a different position and from a different place, but I think we end up at the same place. My reaction, and I saw that same tape that you're describing when the person yelled, he's a terrorist, and then the kill him reference as well. And my take was, okay, wait, this is no longer politics. Yeah, my take on that was that's not okay anywhere in the world, but in my country, that's really not okay. And that's not the way that things are to be done here. And we have an interest, not only patriotic, but an issue of decency in ensuring that that is not the direction that this is going to go. We don't allow our senators to beat one another to death with their canes on the floor of the Senate anymore either.
Mm-hmm.
We don't allow for, frankly, we don't allow for joking about bombs and security lines at the airport. There are grounds on which you make not only a tactical and practical decision, but you make a decision that is about patriotism and decency and about what kind of country we're not going to be. And you can call that moral, and you can therefore call it religious. But either way, I think it's a call to a basic humanity in the process, that when you see people ignore it, it makes you think less of them as a person.
When we come back, we're going to look into a crystal ball. Now, I don't know whether Rachel brought a crystal ball with her or not. I'm not real good at that, but we're going to take a shot at it and say what's going to happen now in the remaining days of this campaign. Rachel Meadow will still be with us. We'll be right back. back, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief. My guest today is Rachel Maddow, host of The Rachel Maddow Show, heard here on Air America Radio, and The Rachel Maddow Show seen on MSNBC. Here's more of our conversation about religion, politics, and the media, and you'll hear some of our predictions about what's to come on Election Day. Rachel, two or three cleanup questions and then some crystal ball gazing.
Okay.
How has the media done so far in this election? And I'm asking a very general question on purpose.
I think the media gets about a C. I think the media has been a little bit like a puppy chasing its tail, running around in very tight circles, fascinated by the last thing it did, unable to sort of get the sense that time is passing, ground is being covered, and there are bigger questions to be asked. The news cycle is so short. The news cycle probably turns over three or four times in a day now. And that has led to a sort of reflexivity where you cover the coverage. And so many of the questions are being asked that are being asked are, how will this play in the media? How will this be received? What sort of coverage will this get? It's the media covering itself. And that's less useful to the country than people, I think, having a calm, eyes on the horizon, big picture take on where we're at.
You gave the media a C. If you were asked to lecture to a group of students who were going to be doing in the future what you're doing now, and you were using what you've learned in this election campaign as the basis of that lecture, what would you say to them? What do they need to do differently?
I think that they should be unafraid to cover policy. That covering politics, covering the competition, covering the strategic choices of the campaign and the way they execute those choices is fun and easy, not very original, and actually not very helpful to the country. And I am constantly impressed by the poll numbers that show you what Americans actually care about and the things that they respond to. They don't necessarily respond to style, tactics, and execution. They respond to issues. And so policy has become almost a specialty within the media right now, and it ought to be the core of what we're doing, especially when there are big issues at hand. We're in an economic crisis. We've got two uncompleted wars. We've got a big ideological choice to make between these two mainstream presidential contenders. Americans are taking the choice seriously, and the media ought to take it more seriously as well and not just get caught up in the competitive aspect of it.
I think you started down the road of this answer just then, but let me encourage you to go on down it. What is at stake on Election Day?
I think the most important thing that is at stake on Election Day is the role of America in the world after the Cold War and after 9/11. I don't think that we have yet figured out what our strategic and moral place is in relation to other countries. And we've got 180,000, 185,000 Americans stationed abroad in long-term occupations that have no military purpose. They have strategic purposes, but they are essentially our troops are functioning abroad as a giant, well-armed, inappropriately trained Peace Corps, and it's not what the military was designed for. And we're trying to use our military for everything. So, on the one hand, I think about it in very personal terms. I think about the military families who are enduring third, fourth, and fifth tours of duty with no end in sight. I think about the National Guard never being again what it has been in the past. People sign up for the National Guard because they want the training, they want the educational credits, and they want to be filling sandbags if the rivers rise in their hometown. The National Guard will never be seen that way again. The reserves will never be seen that way again. So those things are very close to my emotional center in terms of what I want this country to be. We also need to figure out domestically whether or not we want to believe in government, whether we want government to work well, or whether we are going to try to muddle through with a government that we all agree to hate and undermine. Those are the big choices. I'm not sure that Obama or McCain is going to be a great leader on the international issues. I know there is a very, very big difference between them on the domestic issues. And I feel like somebody's going to need to step up on the international stuff, because we need some real, we need a real change in what has been the foreign policy consensus about how we act in the world.
So what's going to happen on Election Day?
What do you think is going to happen, Welton?
Nope, you're the guest.
Here's my giant boulder of salt that goes with this. I am a notoriously bad predictor. And as a kid who grew up in the Reagan era, and who's only ever seen two Democrats win the White House in my entire lifetime, I tend to underestimate Democratic electoral chances. So that's the grain of salt. That said, I think that McCain's going to win. I think that it's going to largely because of racism. And I don't want that to be the grounds on which an election is decided, but I think that probably will be the case. And I desperately hope that I will be wrong, because I don't want to feel that way about my country.
Because you're a friend as well as a colleague, I have one other question.
Okay.
You are becoming a hero to a lot of people.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
You are trusted. You raise questions other journalists don't raise. You're getting praise from various segments of those who write about the media. You're incredibly busy. What's all this popularity doing to Rachel Maddow?
Honestly, Welton, in totally personal terms, I am trying to not absorb it. I'm trying to stay focused day to day on doing the best broadcasting that I can and being as sort of intellectually rigorous as I can about what I'm doing. And I'm trying not to think about the fact that a lot of people are paying attention, not on principled grounds, but just on strategic grounds. Because I want to be good at what I'm doing, and I think that can. I'm not sure it helps. Do you think that's a good way to approach it?
If that's the way you approach it, I think it's a good way for you to approach it.
It's a coping mechanism, ultimately.
Sure.
It's not necessarily a strategy.
Sure.
But that's what I'm doing so far, is I'm trying to appreciate it, and I'm trying to recognize it enough to be grateful for it, but not let it run off with my ego.
Well, I tell you what, you have a place on State of Belief anytime you want to come here.
Thank you.
This has been fun talking. I hope it's been helpful to our listeners. I hope we'll do this again.
We certainly will, Welton. It's great to see you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's our show for this week. Boy, it was so much fun. And always, thanks to Center for American Progress for the use of their studio. Remember to share your thoughts about today's show by going to stateofbelief.com and clicking on the Contact Us page. We absolutely love hearing from you. And as always, we must remind you that State of Belief is produced by Interfaith Alliance Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. And by the way, while you're there, think about becoming more than a listener. You can become a member of Interfaith Alliance. Your membership can help keep State of Belief on the air. Make sure you tune in next week. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Reverend Welton Gaddy, and that's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief, religion and radio done differently.